Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
Memphis Mayor Jim Strickland on his priorities for a second term. Tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I am joined tonight by Memphis Mayor Jim Strickland. Thanks for being here again.
Thank you for having me.
Along with Bill Drees, reporter with the Daily Memphian. First up, congratulations. You've won your second term.
Thank you.
You've said, I think you said somewhere in the campaign, this will be your last campaign. You're termed out. It's a two-term limit. But is this the last of electoral politics for you?
Yeah. Yes, for a lot of reasons. But there's a practical reason. I just don't think there's anywhere else to go. As a Democrat, I can't win statewide. If Phil Bredesen can't win, then I have a little bit less money than Governor Bredesen. So I don't see that as an opportunity. There's no way in the world I'd want to be in Congress. So this is it, and that's fine.
Yeah. So let's talk a little, I mean, when you look back at your first term, and now you look ahead at another 4 years for, you know, I guess your term starts in January, technically,
right.
But you look towards another 4 years. Is there anything what do you take from this last 4 years and say philosophically or in terms of procedure, in terms of approach, that you really want to do differently, that you've sort of learned from that time that you want to apply going forward?
That's a good question. I don't know if this exactly answers your question, but we've got to clean up the city, meaning there's just litter all over the place. And we've not done a good job at that at City Hall or the city in general. There's a couple organizations working on that, and they do a great job with very limited resources. And that's the thing. It's going to take a lot of resources to get that done. But I think we need to do it. I think to improve the quality of life and improve the city, if we're trying to sell the city to people to move to the city or bring their businesses to the city, we've got to clean it up. So I don't know if that exactly answers your question, but that is something
I will say rarely do people exactly answer it. So don't feel alone. Yeah, don't feel alone.
But that's something different that I don't think we did a great job on the first term that we need to do a better job.
And is that, let's just stay with that for a second. How much can the city do? If someone's pulling up to a stoplight and throwing a cup out there, the police can't be there. They've got bigger priorities. You know, Public Works can't be there. Public Works can't sweep up every night after the city goes to sleep. I mean, how it's more of a change of attitude, right?
Well, yeah, there's two things. There's two things. There's convincing people not to litter, because Memphians are putting it on. I mean, I always joked on the campaign trail that litter does not rain from the sky or fall off trees. We put it there.
Yeah.
So we got to get people not to throw it down on the ground. And secondly, when it is, we got to pay people to pick it up, and that's extraordinarily expensive.
Before I go to Bill, back to this sort of notion of changes from the first term to the second. I mean, do you look at it as, okay, this is my legacy term? People talk about that a lot with elected officials. This is what I leave behind. These are the kinds of things I want to be remembered for. Do you approach it that way?
No, not at all. I just think that's just the whole wrong attitude. I'm just trying to do a good job of serving the city, growing jobs, getting third grade literacy rate up, cleaning up the city, providing good housing, moving the city along. I am absolutely not concerned about any legacy.
Bill.
Mayor, you may have heard the sales tax hike passed.
Yes.
On the ballot. So there's been a great deal of discussion that now that decision has been made, how does the city handle it? We had two city council members on this program a week ago, Jerry Curry and Martavius Jones, who said that in order to fully restore those benefits that were cut 4 years ago, that it might not be just a half-cent sales tax hike to pull that off. It might be a property tax hike, too.
I don't think that's true in the short term. And when I say short term, frankly, as long as I'm mayor, I think the income from the sales tax will cover the expenses outlined in the referendum for some period of time. I do think the expenses of those benefits will exceed eventually the income from the sales tax, but that's going to be down the road. Mm-hmm. We are going to, I am going to give the council an update on where we are Tuesday at council, kind of talk about the timeline. As you'll remember, it took the city 2 years from 2014 to 2016 to change the benefits in the first place. I don't think it's going to take us 2 years to ramp up these benefits, but it will take time.
Have you had any indications of concern from Justin Wilson, the state controller, on this?
No, I don't think concern is the right word, but they do have to approve, as I understand it, under the law, they have to approve any pension changes. Not necessarily the health care changes, the pension changes, so they do have to approve that.
Do you, I won't get too much into what you're going to tell the council, but is some of this waiting to see what the county commission does on their option of taking half of the revenue?
Absolutely. You know, if they were to take half, that you know, the council members might be correct there that in the short term it would take some more taxes, but we got to see that. We also, you know, they're adding people to a huge number of people to the insurance, to the pension plan. It just takes time to do that. And then I do have one concern. I'll talk to the council about this. We have roughly 600 combined police officers and firefighters who are retirement eligible right now. They could get their pension right now and walk out. And if they had retiree health care, would that actually incentivize them to retire? So I know the intent from everyone, the public, the associations, and all the voters was to retain more police officers and firefighters. But if it has the exact opposite effect and actually helps people leave, you know, even I'm not saying all 600 would, but if half, that's a huge number. And you know, we're already short police officers. I'm not saying we can't overcome that. That challenge, but that's we need to talk about it. Our administration, the council, and even the associations.
So, do you take the referendum as, you know, a mandate that really effectively requires you to implement what is in that referendum language? Because technically, the council spends the money. The council could, I mean, technically, there are a lot of people arguing that the council could take that money and put it towards roads. I mean, they don't have to fulfill that. That's really a more aspirational referendum than a binding requirement. But you sound like you're saying, no, we're gonna do everything possible to go back to the 2014 benefits as outlined in the referendum. Or am I misinterpreting?
Well, no, I agree with most of what you say. It is not legally, we're not legally required to do this. It's clear under the law, but I said all along that I would try to enforce the will of the people. And that is on a pension to bring a small number of firefighters and police officers back into the old pension system. And then for health care, allow firefighters and police officers to add their spouses, and for pre-65 retirees. You know, health insurance has changed since 2014. So just in the world, it's not going to be exactly, in fact, we don't have the same insurance company, for instance. So it's not going to be exactly like that, but certainly the intent I will advocate for. And I have no reason to believe the council won't go along with that too.
So I am surprised, actually, because you were on the council in 2014, voted to reduce those benefits at that time. But you feel like the city's in a place now that it can, with what could, if it gets the $50 million in increased sales of tax revenue, it can do this, and it will be a sustainable change over the long run.
No, that so, I mean, it's so, going to be sustainable. Yeah. It's sustainable for my 4 years.
Yeah,
I do believe that over the long term, the expenses, particularly healthcare expenses, will exceed the revenue generated by sales tax.
But is that a responsible thing for the council and the mayor to put in place something that's going to outrun itself 6, 7, 8 years down the road?
Yep, but the voters asked for it.
Yeah.
So we do need to probably put some safeguards in there. For instance, if the expenses ever do exceed the revenue, maybe then the benefits change somewhat and constrained within the revenue generated by the sales tax. So all those things we've got to work out. But that's a really good point that we need to put something in place, and we've talked about that would constrain the expenses so they don't exceed. the revenue.
Back to Bill.
Does the city start collecting, or does the state start collecting that extra half cent right off the bat?
It's my understanding, if the county does not take their half, that the new sales tax will take effect December 31st. The state will get that money and then send it to the city the end of February. That would be the first money that the city would actually see. Wow. And then none of that money, as you know, would ever be spent without council authorization.
All right. Changing topics here to the second term. Are there going to be some changes in the ranks of your administration?
Well, the one that immediately affects me is my chief of staff, Lisa Jeter, is retiring. Lisa's worked for city government since, you know, the late 80s, and she is a repository, kind of like you, who knows everything about city government, and that's been a huge resource, and she's got such great judgment that's affecting. But Maria Furman is going to take her spot, and she's been around city government for 10, 12 years, and she's very capable, so she'll do a good job. Mike Rollins is in the drop. And that's it.
What does that mean? That
means that he's entered into a system where he's announced his retirement date. There's a financial side to it too, but he's got to retire about a year and a half from now.
Rawlings being the director of police for those
yes,
not close to
right.
Go ahead.
And his deputy director, James Ryle, which will be about the same time. I don't think there'll be a wholesale change at all because I was telling the directors this yesterday. I've been meeting with everyone individually. I think that we got a resounding victory in this election because they have done an incredible job. I work with outstanding people, and I cannot find who said it, but I believe it, that good government is good politics, and we won because we've done a good job. So, and that's because these directors and chiefs have done a good job.
One of those things you ran on the first time, it came up quite a bit in the second round, was we talked about police and getting the police, you know, the crime problem in Memphis. Right. The whole country has a crime problem. Memphis has a particularly bad crime problem. Getting the police back to something like 2,300. I think you're right around 2,100 with this class that's about to graduate. One of the big issues that's been brought up since the election or right around that time was the residency requirement, opening up eligibility to become a police officer to what, a 2-hour driving radius. You're in support of that.
And I've always been in support of it. My first month on the council in January, whatever year that was, I can't remember.
2008.
Mm-hmm. I proposed, at that time, city employees had to live in the city of Memphis. And it was very controversial, and we ended up compromising that they could live in Shelby County. We as a collective have done a remarkable job of hiring and retaining police officers better than we were. In the last 28 months, as you said, we're about to graduate a class in November. When that class graduates, I'll be able to say in the last 28 months, we've had an increase of about 200 officers.
Net increase
of 200, which is really good. Now, we need many more than that. I do think we need all the help we can get. And if we could relax the residency requirements, which Nashville and other cities have done, I think it would benefit us.
You know, some of the critics have said, I mean, I think the criticisms have been, one, if you hire someone from outside Memphis, Shelby County, they're getting paid Memphis dollars, but not paying taxes in Memphis because maybe they live out in Fayette County or they live down in DeSoto County. And then the other one is a more, I don't know if it's philosophical, but the idea that people who aren't invested in Memphis, who don't live here, aren't as necessarily, these are not my words, it's what other people have said, respectful of or understanding of their neighbor, right? They're more of an outside force coming in. There's a sort of almost an argument for dehumanizing the people that they police. You don't see any concerns there on either that pragmatic, the tax, you know, point of view, or the sort of philosophical, you want your neighbor to be your police officer and we're all in this together.
No, I understand that position. This is the same thing we talked about 12 years ago. And in theory, I might agree with that if we were at complement or near complement, but we are hundreds of officers short. Crime, although going down, is still way too high. The fact that the citizens of Memphis voted to tax themselves, and I think it's because of public safety, People are fed up with crime, and I think we need to do everything we can. So maybe the council should say we can relax the residency requirement until we get to complement, or we get close to complement, some kind of compromise like that. Because in general, I like our employees to live in Shelby County. But if we need to go to adjoining counties in the short term, while we are really, even though we've done a really good job and remarkable job hiring police officers, we're still hundreds short of where we need to be, we need help.
Bill.
One of the issues that started in your first term toward the end was the idea or the prospect of Memphis Light, Gas, and Water severing ties with the Tennessee Valley Authority as its, in effect, wholesale supplier of electricity. Is that a decision that's going to be made in this second term?
Yes. But there's a lot of decision makers. Mm-hmm. There's the MLG&W administration, which is number one. Number two would be the MLG&W board. And number three would be the city council. I actually don't have a direct authority over it. I could have one position and all the others have a different one and they would govern. Now I'm involved. Doug McGowan, our chief operating officer, is co-chairing a committee with JT Young, the president of MLG&W, to really look at those four studies and look at the issue of can we get reliable power for less money elsewhere? And that committee has been actively meeting. The meetings are open to the public. It's a diverse group of people on that committee. And I believe they're supposed to have their study done by the first quarter of the new year. And I'm looking forward to those results.
In the interim, Memphis Light, Gas, and Water has a study that it commissioned on its structure, its efficiency, that indicated that over a matter of years, that through attrition mostly, that the utility could pare its employment roles by something over 300 to 400 people, and that there are some other measures that they should take in terms of what supervisors do in terms of approving sick leave and making up crews like that. Is this moving, do you think, toward another rate hike increase with those efficiencies in place?
Well, I think that's what's being proposed, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. I've not seen their budget proposal, but I've read that MLG&W is asking for a rate increase. I've not reviewed the efficiency study, so I can't really comment. When you need more money, you either cut expenses or raise your income. And for government, it's taxes. For MLG&W, it's rates. Those are really the only two things you can do. Now, as a side note, I do wish if we were a growing community and had more taxpayers and more ratepayers, that would generate more income. And that's the true long-term solution, because you've heard me say it, Memphis is losing population. And MLG&W covers the entire county, but the population, even the county, has been fairly static. If we had more people moving in, that would alleviate some of the pressure and generate more money for the infrastructure at MLG&W. So I don't have a position yet on the rate increase. I don't even know how much it is or what is it water, light, electric, or gas? I don't know.
But are you concerned that, I mean, JT Young's been on the show. I think he was on Bill's podcast recently. I mean, they have a huge amount of maintenance they need to do. That just piles up and it doesn't go, that maintenance problem doesn't go away. It's like roads, it's like other things you deal with. So, I mean, I assume you are concerned though about their maintenance situation.
Absolutely, okay. And that's one of the things this committee is looking at, because in theory, if it was cheaper to get our power from some other source, a lot cheaper, and we would save this amount of money, you could bond that amount of money, maybe, and then pay for infrastructure changes. So that's part of that whole discussion. Infrastructure is a problem in Memphis and nationally, and one of them is power infrastructure.
You talked about people moving in and out. There was some controversy around Raymond James moving from downtown, receiving a pilot tax incentive to move from downtown to East Memphis. They used to be the Morgan Keegan building. There were lots of documented problems with the building owner, and it didn't seem like a particularly great situation from everything we wrote and other people wrote. But pilots are generally, for some people, controversial. Last time on the show, you yelled at me about pilots. And you did. You got mad at me. You raised your voice in my direction because I brought up pilots. But this is one where it surprised a lot of people, and they raised red flags that it was an incentive to move an employer from downtown to East Memphis, which seemed backwards. And Raymond James has an ownership interest in the building it's getting a tax abatement mm-hmm. on. Were you supportive of that pilot?
Yes, 100%. It's more jobs, more tax revenue. What's not to like?
But they're moving from downtown. Isn't that a priority?
They're staying in Memphis. I mean, it's so funny. If you always went with what other people said, some people say that I pay too much attention to downtown. And here the criticism, I'm not paying enough attention to downtown. I'm for jobs for Memphians. I'm for more tax revenue. And this does it both. You can't, the criticisms of pilots are misplaced. They're absolutely misplaced. In the mayor's race, one of the candidates talked about putting pause on economic development. That candidate got 6.9% of the vote.
We're talking about Tammy Sawyer.
We are moving full steam ahead. We're creating jobs. We're bringing more tax revenue to all parts of this city. All neighborhoods are important, and I'm not backing down.
Even though they had a partial interest in that building?
That's not unusual. Sometimes people get pilots on buildings they own.
We've got Bill. We have 6 minutes left here.
When you opened your campaign headquarters, you said that in 2015 the people of Memphis wanted change. That's what they voted for, and you've delivered on that change. Talk a little bit about your in effect brand of change and how that continues in the second term.
Well, things aren't going to really drastically change. They really aren't, because we're heading the right direction. We're going to hire more police officers. That sounds familiar. We're going to pave more roads. That sounds familiar. We're going to continue to try to improve our level of services to the public. And I think the public overwhelmingly voted for that.
But does brilliant at the basics change? And we talked about this during your first term toward the end of it. Does it become a broader consideration as you start to move toward the brilliant at the basics of the basics?
Yeah. I think it actually has already moved beyond that. We're never going to stop trying to deliver very good services, and that's what brilliant at the basics was or is. But, we've been much more than that for a long time. Memphis 3.0 is a perfect example. This is a long-term comprehensive plan for the city. Every neighborhood in the city, how do we bring this growth? Because without a plan, it just flounders. And we have a plan now. And one thing, and I'm sorry, I was speaking to a group in Hickory Hill 2 months ago. And I said, the first time we had a comprehensive plan since 1981, and it hit all of us that Hickory Hill wasn't even part of Memphis in 1981. So it's the first comprehensive plan ever for Hickory Hill.
It hasn't been formally approved, but are you all just abiding by it? I mean, that's your guiding plan as the mayor's office.
Absolutely. Memphis 3.0. Yeah, we're implementing on the administrative side. Now, what the council has clear authority over is land use and zoning. And
so that'll have to be.
Yes.
Okay. A couple minutes left. Let's talk about the riverfront. Is mediation between the riverfront, Memphis River Parks Partnership, the successor to RDC, and Memphis in May, is that almost done?
It's funny. On the way out here, I was thinking, I know they're going to ask me about Tomley Park. And to be honest with you, I've not heard anything about Tomley Park and the mediation for about 6 to 8 weeks. So,
You were busy.
I was busy on the campaign, and when I don't hear something, that's actually good, and things are moving along. The last time I heard, things were moving along, and they were narrowing the issues and trying to bring the parties together. And I've not heard from either party or the mediator that things are different.
I did hear from some people close to you who said that felt like they were quote this close.
Yes.
But in terms of moving away, I mean, you've made clear the mediation is about how Memphis and May lives in the park, not if, right? That was taken off the table and so on. But When you look at the plan, a $60 million proposal for Tom Lee Park plus 10 for the cobblestones, the criticism separate from the Memphis and May thing, the criticisms or concerns, I guess, about the plan are, one, why not redevelop, spend some of that money on Mud Island, mm-hmm. which is kind of sitting there stagnant. I don't think anyone's happy with the state of Mud Island River Park.
Right.
Are you concerned? Would you like to see some of that money go towards Mud Island?
Well, we've already committed. We and the council have already committed the $20 million from the TDZ, not from general operating money, from the TDZ. We've already committed that to Tom Lee Park. Tom Lee Park, a redo to make that a really world-class park, is going to cost millions of dollars, and I think all the money will be well spent there. The River Parks Partnership is working on a comprehensive plan for Mud Island. You know, it's interesting, just putting that Memphis sign out there, it's unbelievable how many people go out to that. I can actually see that sign from my office. I can't look out my window any time of day at that sign and not see somebody out there.
So you're okay with it just staying way it is for now until
yes, sir.
The future? Okay. And then the other criticism concern people have is enough money for maintenance for a world-class park. Do you think they have a plan for maintenance?
Yes. They're going to have to raise more money. And if they're going to be in charge of maintenance, and if they don't do a good job, we can always get somebody else to do it.
All right. Thank you. On that front, Carol Coletta from the Memphis River Parks Partnership will be on in 2 weeks. Mayor Harris, County Mayor Harris, will be on next week. Thank you, Jim Strickland.
Thank you,
Bill. And thank you for joining us. Join us again next week.